morning, everyone. This is CFTO-TV, Channel 9, Cable 8, in Toronto, Ontario, beginning our schedule of telecasting for today. CFTO-TV is owned and operated by Baytown Broadcasting Incorporated and is a charter member of the Canadian television network, CTV. CFTO-TV transmits with authorized power of 325 kilowatts video and 49 kilowatts audio.
Three sad souls, only oh my,
no brains,
no heart,
he's much too shy.
But never mind you three, here's the wizard as you can see. He'll fix that 1, 2, 3 in the funny place called the World of Oz. Oh, the World of Oz is a very funny place where everyone wears a funny, funny face.
All the streets are paved with gold,
and no one ever grows old.
In that funny land lives the Wizard of Oz.
Welcome to Two Old Farts Talk Sci-Fi. I'm David Klink.
And I am still Troy Harkin.
And this is our Saturday morning cartoons episode. We're recording it on Wednesday, August 24th, 2022, and it is scheduled for broadcast on Saturday, September 3rd. We do not have a special guest for this episode. Before that, Troy will give us a spoiler alert.
I think we need a special sort of Looney Tunes effect in here. So hopefully I can dig one up, like a big boing or something. But here comes the spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert!
Thanks, Troy. That was excellent. We are recording this session via Zoom. Two Old Farts Talk Sci-Fi is a look back to when we fell in love with a speculative genre, to recall these times with fondness and affection. I think a cartoon quote from an article called 50 Plus Best Cartoon Quotes That Everyone Will Love, written by the Kidaddle team on January 28, 2021, may have said it best when it said, and this is number 26 on their list, "I've got a wife, two kids, and 10 finance companies to support. How am I supposed to pay my bills?" And that's George Jetson from The Jetsons.
Who also
Go ahead.
I was going to say, George Jetson, who also has a boy, Elroy, and at the time of this recording, not too long ago, there was, I suppose, the 50th anniversary of George Jetson's birth, as stated on the show.
Wow.
Yeah, I was actually amazed at the coverage that got in the media. They were talking about it like on the ball games. So that was not too long ago, some point in August, and I believe it was last week. But,
George Jetson may have touched everyone, but no, just take that. Let's rephrase that. A lot of people remember the Jetsons. It was almost like, I don't know if this is a proper analogy, it was almost like the Flintstones in space or something like that.
Yeah, it's a perfect analogy.
Yeah, it's not a Stone Age family. This is a Space Age family in this case, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
And I love they had a robot too, right?
Oh, that's right. With a little apron, that's right.
Yeah. And a dog, right?
Astro, which I thought was the coolest name for a dog. Astro.
The Jetsons, brought to you by famous Colgate Dental Cream with activated Gardol. Brushing after eating with Colgate helps stop bad breath, helps fight decay.
I very well remember getting up on Saturday mornings and, you know, there was a definite level of excitement about Saturday mornings when you were a kid in the 60s and 70s.
Oh, yeah.
Because you had a full half day that was set aside by broadcasters for you. And so it was almost like getting up on Christmas morning. Not quite, but almost. And I remember I would get up, and if you were really excited about it, when you turn the TV on, if you turned on, say, CFTO in Toronto, which is where I was, which is the CTV affiliate for those outside of the Toronto region, you know, the first thing you would get back then was the national anthem. And, you know, you would be welcome to the broadcast day by CFTO. And so the first thing that they were obliged to do, and it was also the last thing they were obliged to do in the broadcast day, was play the national anthem. So you got to see footage of the Queen and of Niagara Falls and Mounties doing the musical ride and the prairies of Alberta and Saskatchewan. And I suppose Manitoba, let's not forget Manitoba. And then it kicked into a not so high quality cartoon, like not the ones that we're really going to be digging into, but things like, Dave, do you remember The New Adventures of Pinocchio and Tales of the Wizard of Oz?
Oh, the Tales from the Wizard of Oz. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, the land of Oz is a na 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 where everyone wears a funny face. Yeah. All the streets are paved with gold. Yeah, that's it. And no one ever gets old. Yep. Old. Yep. In that funny place called... Okay, copyright infringement. Come get us. Come get us, Rankin Bass lawyers. That was 1961. So, I mean, has that copyright been renewed? I don't know. But yeah, those were like the staples of things like CFTO. And
very basic, the animation and the quality of it. Like, we were there for the stories and what have you. But, you know, like that, there was that show, and there was always, for some reason, we all loved Spider-Man. And oh, yeah. Also, with the same background was flashing. I don't know if that was Ralph Bakshi or that was.
But I think
there
was right.
All this images going across the back. And Rocket Robin Hood, I don't know if that's they just used the same images going back.
Right.
They said, oh, Spider-Man used it. Why don't we use it?
And, well, I just found out that Ralph Bakshi was also involved with Rocket Robin Hood. So, yeah, you're probably right. I don't know. I know that Spider-Man was produced, I think, in Hamilton. Mm-hmm. But it probably was the same production people, and it was definitely the same time frame, because Rocket Robin Hood was, I have 66 to 69, and it actually aired on CBC, like it was produced by CBC, which I didn't know that they actually did any animated shows.
And those kept showing up in repeats, and they just, it lived much longer than its original air date.
Yeah,
I certainly didn't see it much of it during its original run. I probably saw it more in the early 70s.
Yeah, same here. And for some reason, I don't know if CHCH out of Hamilton would play Rocket Robin Hood a lot, but I seem to recall it like playing either before or after Hilarious House of Frightenstein.
Yes, and that's the other thing that we haven't really talked that much about, is because this is mainly about Saturday morning cartoons. But Alexa, my wife just mentioned to me that, you know what, there's two sets. There's Saturday morning cartoons. There's also the stuff you would see after school in the afternoon.
Yeah,
and I think we'll probably mention some of those, because I think some of the shows we may mention are the ones that actually were after school kind of thing.
Yeah, and there were things like, I know that Alexa had mentioned, I guess, was it What's Opera Doc or Rabbit of Seville, which I think was like, for so many people, you know, of our age, the introduction to opera.
Just like Charlie Brown was an introduction to jazz.
Right.
In the 60s.
Yeah.
What's Opera Doc and those kinds of things were an introduction to opera for, like, kids might have been their first experience with opera.
Yeah. And multiple times I've heard stories about people going to the opera and they'll see something like Barber of Seville, and they will almost, I mean, not, they won't seriously expect to hear it, but they want to hear, you know, what would you do with a wabbit?
If you see that I'm much sweeter, I'm your little senorita. You are my type of guy. Let me straighten your tie, and I shall dance for you.
Yes. And like you want those, you want those lines in there.
Well, Alexa was singing one of the songs to me, and it was quite funny. But and another thing, just as a warning to our listeners or our listener, is that if your last name is Seville, don't name your daughter Barbara, because that may not work that well.
Yeah, and we should also, I mean, we really should just always have a potential explicit warning. Just because this is our Saturday morning cartoons episode does not necessarily mean that it's kid friendly. So be warned. And I guess whenever I think of Rocket Robin Hood, I also think of the Mighty Hercules.
That's me! That's me!
Yeah. That was Newt.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And there's Daedalus, of course, because you always want like these kinds of things that they do go to that story idea from thousands of years. Like we're talking about like Greek theater and theater from a long time ago. The idea of the protagonist having to have that enemy or that other that you have to somehow defeat or fight against to be able to prove your might or your worth or how intelligent you are to be able to get pat, you know, like riding under a sheep to be able to avoid the Cyclops and those kinds of things. Like the hero has to have obstacles. You have to have obstacles or there's no story.
Yeah, definitely. And with Hercules, I think we can objectively say, regardless of your orientation, that Hercules was pretty damn hot. He was pretty buff, and he was showing a lot of skin. Sorry, I totally set you up in a situation where, how do you respond to that? Well, you respond to that by talking about Art Clokey's animation, Gumby and Davy and Goliath.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That was one of the... But when you talk about showing a lot of skin, I was going to talk about my early experience of with Cecil the C6 sea serpent.
Okay, that's a segue. I definitely want to hear the story.
Yeah, because that was one of these cartoons that was just, I'm sure it must have been from the late 60s. There were only so many options. Like kids nowadays, I don't know what their experience is or what they watch, but back in our day, there were only three or four stations
you
could even get in properly. And there were only so many options, but the Saturday morning was a kid friendly zone. And there were just so many, like you would actually look at the schedule or try to figure out what's on. And then you would have your own thing. Like you'd watch Scooby-Doo and then you'd watch this, you'd watch this and you'd have, like for me, it would be Johnny Quest. Now with Cecil, the C6 sea serpent, the only thing I remember from it, I may have mentioned this in one of our episodes from a season or two ago. I remember this thing. It was like, you know, back in the atomic era in the 50s where they were blowing up things. And there was this place called Bikini Atoll that there was actually one of these tests for a nuclear weapon back in the 50s. And then what happened was Cecil had these binoculars. The sea serpent had binoculars. And someone was saying, there's no Bikini Atoll.
Well, Beanie Boy, according to the map, we're approaching the prehistoric land where the last of the singing dinosaurs dwell. Now, we just sailed under the Bridge of Bardo. We ducked under the Lolo Brigida. And now we're coming to the singing dinosaurs' island home. No Bikini Atoll!
No Bikini Atoll! Wow!
And then his eyes all bugger because he thinks there might be one without a bikini on now, like a nude woman or something.
Yeah.
Like, this is for a kid's cartoon.
Sure.
For goodness sake.
Yeah.
I mean, and come that, on, guys. And come
that,
on, man.
That begs, like, Robinism from Batman and from the Batman show, which, you know, he had the great line, "Holy bikinis, Batman!"
Oh, no.
Yeah.
But for me, the earliest, and I'll have to get that from you, what your earliest memories are. But for me, Cecil the C6 sea serpent, for sure. Now, one of my earliest and favorite ones was, well, there are two of them. One was Johnny Quest, and was kind of neat. If you compare Johnny Quest to Scooby-Doo, is such a neat comparison, because Johnny Quest, the mummies, and whatever thing that we're running into were real.
Yeah,
these were not people wearing a costume, and these pesky kids have somehow unwittingly or somehow shown that this person who's terrorizing this couple or this town or whatever aren't actually zombies or aren't these weird creatures. They're people, and it's almost like Scully.
Yeah, there's none of that. Look, it's old man Johnson.
Oh my God. So Johnny Quest was very different in that sense, because they were all like the mummy episode. I'd have to watch these all again. I think it would hold up. And I thought the animation was better in Johnny Quest, but maybe, and I'm not sure if Johnny Quest, based on the characters and what it said and what it did, may not be able to stand up today.
Right.
And people may have concerns about it.
Sure.
But,
It had a really cool tone to it, as I recall, which I liked. Where
a great opening, right? That whole that whole space plane thing.
Yeah,
the characters, what they're trying to do, and him, Johnny Quest, and Haji, and that dog bandit, I guess it was a dog, and they're going on their own adventures, and they're trying to figure shit out also while the adults are doing their thing.
Yeah.
And that mummy episode, like the mummy was drawn so well, and it was a scary thing for me at that age to see this thing that was could actually look into a second floor window was just frightening to me.
Yeah, that would scare the heck out of you. It's, I mean, it was basically like when Kong looks through the the hotel window looking for Fay Wray. I guess two early ones that I remember that I really liked, Underdog and Adamant were two that I really loved as a little kid. So Adamant ran from 1965 to 68 in its original run. Of course, it stuck around in syndication for ages, as did Underdog. Underdog was 64 to 67. And I just liked those, you know, as a kid, I liked the twists on the superhero, but with these kind of cute looking cartoon images. And another one that I know that you and I were both fans of, and probably right around this time, were the like the Thunderbird shows. What were those again, Dave? Do you remember the actual? There were like three of them, I think.
Yeah, there was Thunderbirds or Go, and there was also like Supercar, and there was remember the name of the other one. But these were all that special kind of the puppetry with the strings and all that Super Marionation.
Yeah, and they had the great, great action sequences with these really beautiful, you know, models that they had built.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Thunderbirds are go.
And everyone had their favorite Thunderbird. Mine was two. I'm not sure if you had a favorite one as well.
In terms of the...
the actual spaceships, the Thunderbird 1, well, Thunderbird 2, Thunderbird 3.
I liked the... I remember I had the model. I don't know if it was made by Corgi. I'm going to guess it probably was Corgi, because I think Corgi was a British company. And the show was British, but it was the... it was the underwater one. And I remember I had the model of the... like the toy. It was basically like a Hot Wheel, but much bigger. It was die cast, and it was, you know, probably about the size of, I'm trying to think of what would be a good chocolate bar, like a Hershey bar sort of thing, in terms of like its area that it covered. And it was heavy and hefty. So yeah, whatever the vehicle was from the underwater show, that was a big one. And I was, I think like you,
yeah.
I know.
Yeah,
I know
Thunderbird 1 was the rocket ship, and the pilot was Scott Tracy. Thunderbird 2 was a large, almost like an aircraft, like something for carrying things. Auxiliary vehicles included pod vehicles. And that was Virgil Tracy was a pilot for that one. That was definitely my favorite one. Thunderbird 3 was a spaceship. It was red with the big 3 on it. That was a beautiful design. It had ion drive particles. That was Alan, they say Alan Tracy or John Tracy, and they're also co-pilots for that one. Now, the one underwater was Thunderbird 4, and that had a missile launcher. That was Gordon Tracer. That was basically piloted by Aquanaut Gordon Tracer. That was the underwater one.
Yeah, and my dad was in the Navy, so we were living in Halifax. So I sort of gravitated to anything that was, you know, water-like. And I thought that was cool, having this little toy. Did you ever have any of those die-cast toys from the series?
Yeah. We had the spaceship one, Thunderbird 3, the red rocket. We definitely had that. We might have had Thunderbird 2. There was also a Thunderbird 5, which was the space station. And I think I'm trying to see if that was, I think that was basically it, but that certainly gave you a good number of things, because the whole idea of them being international rescue and them trying to help people out, and of course the characters and the fact that they had this very strange, this whole super marionation, which of course I always liked in the, I don't know if it was 100th episode of Stargate, where they did their parody, because every, you know, X number of episodes, whether it's 50 or 100, they did a special kind of fun episode. They had Wormhole Extreme of other characters playing themselves. They also had a version of Super Marionation where all the characters in Stargate were puppets, super marionated puppets.
Wow.
And then they actually go through the Stargate, and of course the things holding them up, the strings are cut off because they've gone through a Stargate.
Right.
Oh no. And then basically they fall to the ground.
Yeah. Oh no.
Spoiler alert, by the way. That was a lot of fun to do a parody of Super Marionation.
Now, I thought before we actually get into the big guns of our childhood and looking at an actual broadcast Saturday, I thought I'd get our Beatlism sort of over with, because it fits in so naturally at this time. And it sort of is in that same era that we had just listed off a bunch of shows from, like Underdog and Adamant and yeah, stuff from the mid 60s and Rocket Robin Hood as well. Mm. So in 1965, ABC started airing at 10:30 on Saturday mornings the Beatles cartoon, just called The Beatles. There were 2 songs per episode. It was not the voices of the Fab Four acting. It was the actual songs that they used, clearly. But yeah, they had some really awful American Liverpool accents. Maybe not as bad as the one that I did a bunch of episodes back where you had me do my attempt at Ringo, but still pretty atrocious.
Here we are, practically starving, and you go and spend every last cent we brought with us.
Imagine, buying 15 rings.
All right, drummer boy. We're going to have to pawn them to buy food. Hand them over.
I can't. I lost them shaking hands with autograph collectors.
You mean ring collectors. Well, that settles it. We'll have to telegraph Brian for money.
The 39 episodes were produced from 65 to 67, there were 3 seasons of new material. And then there was a 4th season in, I guess, 68, 69, that was just a season of reruns. And that was on a Sunday, not on Saturday. But the producer, Al Brodax, also ended up getting the contract to do Yellow Submarine, the Beatles feature film, a few years later. The show set the template for other musical shows like The Osmonds, The Jacksons, even The Monkees and The Archies, where you would get a little madcap caper going on, sort of a la the Marx Brothers, and then it would cut to a couple of songs where, you know, if it was the Monkees, it would be the actual band lip syncing. But in this case, of course, it was just a cartoon caper would be happening while you'd hear a song like I Want to Hold Your Hand. And again, yeah, that was the template for a lot of other musical shows that followed. And I actually was a big fan of the Osmonds cartoon in the early 70s. Full disclosure. The Beatles one, I'm still trying to find on DVD. Apple is doing whatever it can do to, I think, make that go away. But they should know at this point that, you know, we are the demographic for that stuff, and we want it. So just release it, goddammit. Just clean it up and release it. Yeah. So that was the Beatles cartoon. Do you ever watch that either? I mean, not necessarily when you were a kid, but any of the times that it's popped up on other sources?
Yeah, I might have. I'm trying to remember because I don't want to get it confused. Because didn't the Beatles also do some kind of animated movie?
Well, that would be Yellow Submarine, I guess.
Yeah. And that one, you know, I love that. But I might have seen the Beatles one. I just can't remember. It would have been like 50 years ago. So it's a long time ago.
Yeah. The cool thing I
have more memory for Fat Albert and Bugs Bunny and some other things.
Yeah. Same here. Like the 70s stuff is my wheelhouse for sure. It did have a good look. I've got to say the images are great. I would still love to get a t-shirt with those, of those caricatures of the Beatles. Mm. But yeah, the voices, that was something else. Dave, do you want to look at a Saturday morning from 1976? What you would have found in the TV guide or on your television set?
Sure. Yeah, no, I think you've got a listing. This is a kind of handy thing to do because I was actually on a panel some years ago. I think it was in 2016. It was 50 years since 1966, and the panel was me and Jeff Beeler and my brother-in-law Rob Sawyer, and we just looked at, because in 1966 there were just so many science fiction or genre kind of shows on TV that I just had a TV guide that I had that had Rapitra on the cover, and we just basically went to the listings, said, well, on this night we had this, and there were just so many. It was quite cool reminiscing about that. So I would love it if you could just, for the 1976, to go through what the options were, and we could sort of talk about what we thought of them.
Okay. And actually, I did want to add one thing quickly to sort of set this up a little bit, and we've talked about it in the past. In the 70s, it was such a big deal that the networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC, would all have on a Friday night prior to Labor Day, they would have a special, like a variety show special, that would unveil all of their Saturday morning cartoons. They would basically do the Saturday morning lineup, and they'd show a little clip of everything, but they would have musical acts come on and do a song and maybe interact with a character in a person in costume, like say Jabberjaw, you know, somebody in a Jabberjaw costume might come out and have a little skit with say Donny Osmond, you know? And that was such a big deal. I remember as a kid, it's like, I gotta watch that. Like that is such a big deal. You know, I bought into the hype that the networks were giving me.
It's the CBS Saturday Morning Preview Special, starring Scott Baio, Thurl Brooks, James Best, the Croc Puppets, plus a sneak peek at CBS's big Saturday morning show, Donkey Kong, Pitbull.
Those ones, right, David?
Yeah, absolutely. I look forward to those because you could actually see what all the shows were going to be.
Yeah, and I mean, it was a surprise quite often, like what was coming. And let's get into a Saturday morning from 1976.
This is the place to be with ABC.
Come this September, this is the place to be.
So, American Broadcasting Company, ABC, they began 8 o'clock. Tom and Jerry, Grape Ape, Mumbly Show. Now, I don't recall who Mumbly is. Oh, no, it's that dog, right? There was a dog called Mumbly. And I think he, like,
yeah,
had,
yeah.
Did he have, I think he had that laugh, like the, like that.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, right. And Grape Ape was a big purple gorilla. Like sort of like...
That makes sense.
Like, yeah. He was like sort of like the size of like Mighty Joe Young, say. And I believe he wore a bow tie and a baseball cap.
You're right about the mumbly thing, because I see an image here that I've just looked up online. He has a very distinct... He's wearing this almost like this orange trench coat.
Okay,
Yeah, definitely.
And we all know Tom and Jerry, of course.
So he's a dog detective. Cartoon dog detective. Mumbly. Tom and Jerry were great. Like,
yeah,
that was must watch TV for sure.
Yeah, and obviously it was the model for Itchy and Scratchy as well. So if for nothing else, you know, it's great that we got Itchy and Scratchy out of Tom and Jerry. So at 9 o'clock we had Jabberjaw. So this is 1976, the year after Jaws, and everything was Jaws at that point. So in this very much the same way that a year later everything would be Star Wars. So 9 o'clock was Jabberjaw. 9:30, the Scooby-Doo Dino-Mutt Hour. And Dino-Mutt was sort of like a superhero version of somebody like Scooby-Doo. He looked like a greyhound, I believe. This one I had forgotten all about, but I remember really liking it. 10:30 on ABC was the Croft Super Show, featuring Captain Cool and the Kongs, which were a band. And I may intercut a clip of them doing the theme song. But if you were in alive in the 70s and watching cartoon shows, you would remember this.
Don't get left behind. Take a trip with us today. We will lead you to a land of dreams. Broadcast some super shows. They will blow your mind.
So, the Croft Super Show, featuring Captain Cool and the Kongs, Wonderbug, Dr. Shrinker, which I believe you have brought up in the past on when we did our Shrinkage episode, I think. Maybe it was from a list, but Dr. Shrinker. And then there was Electra Woman and Dinah-Girl, all encompassing the Croft Super Show from 10:30 to 11:30.
Saturday mornings on ABC. Watch them all, Doc.
So, that was ABC. Would you like to hear what CBS
had to offer? Yeah. It looks like ABC had a good lineup. And I do remember most of those shows. And they were certainly memorable at the time. I mean, we're not talking about, you know, Citizen Kane here.
But, no.
But, you know, Dino-Mutt Dog Wonder. I like the animation. It's very clear. I'll show you probably have already seen this. But the whole design and stuff, how they, you know, and the danger of capes, of course, but
yeah,
for sure. So are you on to NBC or
I could do NBC if you like.
What do you got? CBS next?
Okay. Yes, I do have CBS. So here we go. 8 o'clock start strong with a, you know, traditional one, Sylvester and Tweety. Sort of more of the same. 8:30 Bugs Bunny Roadrunner Show.
Oh yeah.
9:30 Tarzan. And I do remember that animation, and that was a nice little adventure cartoon. Then one of my all-time favorites, even though it does not stand up at all. At 10 o'clock was the Shazam Isis Show. Which, you know what? I have a note on that, so I may as well flip to it now. Yeah, it was an hour long with half an hour of a Shazam episode, half an hour of ISIS. So this is 1976. I believe it was 1973 when DC got the rights to the Shazam Captain Marvel character and started doing a lot with it, including creating this show. But they kind of monkeyed with it because instead of Billy Batson being like a, I don't know, 10, 11, 12-year-old, he's now looking like Keith Partridge from the Partridge Family. And he was played by Michael Gray. And because the show had an educational advisor, they wouldn't allow like this kid to be traipsing about America on his own. So they thought he needs a mentor. So they got classic Hollywood star Les Tremaine to play mentor the mentor. he had this sort of like, you know, advisory sort of role in Billy's life, you know, mentor.
Well, I guess Bill Bixby wasn't available or something like that.
Yeah. And they actually had two Captain Marvels. Jackson Bostwick played Captain Marvel originally, and he was injured while shooting a stunt, and he asked for time off, and he went to his doctor, and while that was going on, CBS basically pulled the rug out from under him and brought in another actor named John Davey to play him. And Bostwick ended up suing CBS and winning because, you know, wrongful dismissal, the dude was actually hurt. But there's a story where John Davey, the actor who took over for playing Captain Marvel, AKA for kids today, that's Shazam. Because now Marvel owns the rights to Captain Marvel. Anyway, John Davey went home to show his young son, like he wore the suit home, the Captain Marvel suit home, thought he would impress him. And he kind of liked it, but he said to him, but where's the real Captain Marvel? Because he was expecting to see Jackson Bostwick.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So ISIS was a new character created for the series. DC Comics ended up picking up on the character and putting her into continuity. And ISIS was the first U.S. live-action TV series with a female superhero lead beating Wonder Woman by 4 months, which is kind of a cool thing. And I really like the series. Mm. But again, I mean, it really, in every way, is very dated now. And both shows had to have, because they had to sign off to the approval of educational advisors, they originally had a moral at the end of each story.
And now, back to ISIS.
When someone dares you to do something, it's often something that's either dangerous or wrong to do for some other reason. So the real question isn't whether you have the guts enough to do it or not. The question is, do you have enough nerve not to take the dare? Doing anything that you know is wrong is dumb, because you're the one who'll pay for it. See you next week.
No. Anyway, they would just hit you over the head with it. But that was Shazam and ISIS on CBS at 10 a.m. It was followed by one I wanted to do some research on, David, but maybe you know a little bit about it, a series called Arc 2.
Yeah. No, I definitely watched that show. For me, Saturday morning cartoons means for me animation as opposed to
The live action
anything
stuff.
That's live action.
Yeah, and I have to say, so much of my Saturday morning from the 70s, like my favorite things, a lot of them were live action. So my Google machine, my handheld Google machine, says Arc 2 is an American live action science fiction television series aimed at children that aired on CBS, and it had a one season run. And also I read somewhere here on my Google machine that after the world is ravaged by pollution, three scientists travel around helping people in need. So that was Arc 2. And then the last thing on CBS I have no recollection of at all, called Clue Club. So I clearly was not watching that. On NBC, they began with Woody Woodpecker, again a classic.
Yep.
8:30 was Pink Panther. 10 o'clock, a show, again, no memory of, called McDuff the Talking Dog. Monster Squad, which was live action, which I do have a vague memory of. You know, it was almost like the classic Universal monsters were like the Justice League somehow. 11 o'clock, one of my favorite Saturday morning shows of all time, Land of the Lost.
Yeah.
And that was, it ran from 74 to 76. The characters were Rick Marshall, played by Spencer Milligan, Holly Marshall, played by Kathleen Coleman. Will Marshall was Wesley Uhr. And in the third season, they had Uncle Jack Marshall come on board, and that was played by Ron Harper, who was also in the Planet of the Apes TV series. He was the blonde character on the POTA TV series. Now, I liked the hostile Sleestak lizard men that were on the show. Mm. And then there was, of course, Chaka. And he was played by Philip Paley. He was like a primitive-like. They were called Pakuni on the show. But I thought for some reason that Chaka was played by Clint Howard. For some reason, I have this image of Clint Howard as Chaka, but clearly that's not the case. So they were stuck in a pocket universe where they fall into this hole in the ground and end up in this weird Land of the Lost. Another weird thing about that show was, although it was science fiction, it had a banjo theme, and I was thinking, I don't think I've ever heard another sci-fi show that had banjo music as the opening.
Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition met the greatest earthquake ever known. High on the rapids, it struck their tiny raft.
Some of the writers, David, on that show were Larry Niven, Theodore Sturgeon, DC Fontana, and Ben Bova.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, for a kid show. Yeah.
Yeah, and I know that my brother-in-law Rob Sawyer was a big fan of it and watched it a lot. I was not as taken with it. I didn't like it as much. Strangely enough, I was more of a Star Lost right. series.
Right. Also aired on CFTO, as we were talking about earlier.
Now, it says here, Land of the Lost was actually created by David Gerald, who is, of course, famous from the Trouble with Tribbles episode of the original Star Trek.
Oh, cool. I really thought you were going to say The Trouble with Tracy. I think I'm thinking about CFTO too much.
Yes.
Holy boob tube!
And you'll have to Google that one for our non-Canadian listeners, likely. So that was your Saturday morning in 1976.
Yeah, we had a lot of choice and a lot of things. And, you know, when you talk about things like Tom and Jerry and Sylvester and Tweety Bird, and we had some great classic and really good animation. I mean, it wasn't till later. I guess Looney Tunes, really, that was more of a 80s. I get more of 80s or 90s, that series.
Oh, like the Animaniacs?
Yeah, the Animaniacs is what I meant. Sorry, yeah. Looney Tunes has been around for a long time, but the Animaniacs, and every decade has its own set of things, but we're looking more at the 70s, even though, you know, we could talk about a few things in the 80s.
Yeah, it is actually good that you mention Animaniacs, because, you know, I just happened to, because I was a dad in 1993, I ended up watching some of that stuff. I came back to watching cartoons with my kids. And Animaniacs was great. And it's weird to think now that like my son, who was born in 93, you know, is almost 30. And so we probably do have listeners out there who are, you know, in that age group. So yeah, there was a lot of good stuff happening there. And I will say that, you know, when you compare the animation of things like Animaniacs and the Batman series of the 90s and the Superman stuff, and actually all that Warner Brothers DC stuff that came out of the 90s was so good. And there was a really good series. Don't know if you ever saw it, but it was sort of created as a standalone cartoon show, but again, was incorporated into DC's continuity. And that show was Batman Beyond. Speaking of DC, we should probably also touch on Super Friends.
I think you were more of a fan of the Super Friends series than I was.
Well, yeah. And I guess I was probably, it started in 1973, so I would have been in grade 3. So I was like, I would eat that stuff up as a kid that young. And it really was geared to, like, there was like almost no violence in it at all. So it ran from 73 to 1985. I had no idea that it continued on once I stopped watching, probably by 77 or something. It was on ABC. It had 93 episodes. Ostensibly, it was the Justice League of America. Originally, there was Wendy and Marvin, these two kids that were sort of like detectives in training with their dog, which we called Wonder Dog. And in the second season onwards, Wendy and Marvin were replaced by Zan and Jaina and their monkey Gleek. They were known as the Wonder Twins from the planet Exor. And, we still remember phrases like, Wonder Twin powers activate.
We'll have to try to rescue Aquaman ourselves.
Right, Wonder Brother. And for that, we'll need a little Exor handiwork.
Wonder Twin powers activate.
Form of a seagull.
Shape of an ice gondola.
Come on, Gleek. Let's go.
The show, Super Friends, originally featured the superheroes Superman, Batman and Robin, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, and there were guest appearances by Flash, Plastic Man, and Green Arrow. That changed over the years. In 1978, we got the Legion of Doom, which was just awesome. It was the evil opposite of the Super Friends, featuring Lex Luthor, Bizarro, Brainiac, Sinestro, Riddler, Joker, Gorilla Grodd, Solomon Grundy, Scarecrow, Black Manta. It's such a rogues gallery of everybody. Captain Cole, Cheetah. And I don't know if you remember this aspect or if you had seen enough of it, David, but there was the building. You know how the Super Friends had the Hall of Justice, which was kind of cool looking, right? So they had to come up with a lair for the evil guys. And so the evil team, the evil Super Friends, were called the Legion of Doom, but that was also in the name of the building that they lived in. And it was in a swamp, and it could submerge and it could rise, and it looked just like a giant version of Darth Vader's helmet.
Oh, wow.
And it could fly as well, as I recall. So yeah, and it was 78. So it was definitely based on Darth Vader's helmet.
Yeah, or Zardoz, or some combination of it, or something like that.
Deep within a bleak and dismal swamp, hidden beneath its murky waters, lies the headquarters of the most sinister villains of all time. A Legion of Doom.
You want to talk about Star Trek and POTA in their animated forms?
Yeah. For Star Trek, at least, I've watched a number of the animated episodes a number of times. I'm not an expert on it, but the animated shows for Star Trek were very good on the whole. And with an episode like Yesteryear, where the Explorer, I can't remember if that was the one written by DC Fontana, but it deals with Spock and his growing up, because I think in a classic episode where they meet Spock's parents' journey to Babel. And they mention how Spock had had sort of like this pet kind of thing, but it turns out it was actually this thing with 6-inch long claws and could basically kill you, a Salot. So they actually riffed on that, and they actually created in the animated episode a situation where the older Spock, the current, you know, Spock, going back in time, sort of disguising himself a bit and having to somehow help or do mentor or do something with a younger version of himself, in sort of a time travel kind of special episode dealing with his growing up and him being bullied because he was half human, half Vulcan, and the feeling of being alone and him running away from home, and how do you, can you actually survive? And I think they really pulled it off. So and there are a few really good episodes in the animated one. And they, what was nice is they had almost all of the voices of the original cast doing it. I think that was one of the great Leonard Nimoy moments. Was I think I read somewhere that he had refused to be part of it unless they made sure that, I think it was Nichelle Nichols and maybe Majel Barrett or whomever, like he wanted to make sure that there were a couple people in there. I think Nichelle Nichols was,
and Takei as well.
George Takei. That's it, George Takei. So it was Nichelle Nichols and George Takei were the two people that he said, okay, you have to sign. If they're not in, I'm not going to be on the show.
Yeah, that was
so
really,
he really
something.
Stood up for them. Yep.
Yeah, that's one of the notes that I had, that it's, it was basically the original cast members, thanks to Leonard Nimoy. And the writing was so good. Like, if you really think about it, of all of these shows that we've talked about, it likely did have the best writing of any Saturday morning show ever. And it does stand up. The show actually won an Emmy for Outstanding Entertainment for a children's series.
They also had characters that you couldn't, that they could do animated, because, you know, they could have a very unusual, or someone looking that would have been maybe a bit difficult in the early to mid 70s with where we are with makeup and with effects and everything else.
Sure. Oh man, I would love it if they took that series with the, you know, the original voicings, and just sort of reanimated it, because that's the only downfall, really, is just the look of that 70s animation. But, you know, in terms of the actual content, it's brilliant.
I think we know that man.
It appears to be.
I don't want to think about it.
Cyrano Jones.
And he's got tribbles with him. Tribbles!
Now, unfortunately, another one of, you know, the holdovers in terms of sci-fi from the 60s did not do so well. And I'm thinking in this case of the Planet of the Apes animated series. It certainly did not have the writing that the Star Trek animated series had. By the way, it ran from 75 to 76 on NBC, and it was animated by the DePatie Freeling Company. It had none of the original voices, not even a Roddy McDowall, who was in 98% of all POTA films. And the pacing, oh my God, David, I revisited this a while ago, and I could not believe how slow the pacing was. And this is like for a 22-minute cartoon, right? Mm. And I remember thinking, I feel like I'm fucking watching a 3-hour film, and it's a 22-minute animated thing where there were segments where, you know, it was just panning across a shot of scenery and maybe somebody a long way away in walking or something like that. And then you would return. That's the thing. They repeat shots so much. Like the budget must have been so low for that show that they're constantly repeating shots. And they are barely getting away with the definition of animation. You know what I mean? So often it really was like a static image in the foreground, like a face. And they would almost do that thing. What was that show where they had the lips superimposed onto the face? It was like from the 60s as well, but it was sort of like that. It was just a static image, and the only thing that was moving was the mouth, like mouth flaps going, nothing else. So it's really unfortunate that that was the last thing from Planet of the Apes that we saw for quite a long time.
Yeah, there was that live action Planet of the Apes,
right? Which was
I remember a bit of that. I thought that was better than the animated.
Exactly. It's that's the thing. It's the series from 74, which isn't great, but I loved it as a kid. It's definitely better than the animated series, and even the Tim Burton Planet of the Apes is better than this animated Planet of the Apes. So only watch out of curiosity and don't ever feel compelled to watch a full 22 minutes because it will be like trying to hold your breath for 22 minutes. It's a difficult thing. One thing I wanted to add, Dave, about the Star Trek, what kind of cracked me up was that I don't know if somebody in the animation house did not like DeForest Kelly, but I thought it was kind of hilarious that they felt obliged to include DeForest Kelly's bags under his eyes in the animation.
Oh no.
I as a man with pretty big eye bags as well, I would have asked for a redo on that.
I guess the eye bags have it.
The eye bags do have it.
Bazinga.
We had the idea of doing a sort of merging two shows from the Saturday mornings that we grew up with into a special, because sometimes you did get those crossovers. Like there was a Batman Scooby-Doo episode.
It's Batman and Robin.
Batman and Robin?
What are you doing here?
You're A-okay with us, Scooby.
We don't have any Scooby snacks, but how about some bat snacks as a reward?
Scooby-Dooby-Doo!
But for our merger purposes, I came up with a couple, and I think you've got one, Dave. So in all seriousness, I had Josie and the Pussycats meets the Planet of the Apes, where they are doing their regular jumping around the universe, but then they, you know, hit a time warp or whatever, and then they end up, well, I'm not going to say where, because of spoiler sakes, but on the Planet of the Apes. I also had one that I thought of a while ago, which was Pee-wee's Playhouse, which was the 80s. It wasn't actually, you know, our era, but I loved Pee-wee's. I would get up, you know, after a night of being out partying or whatever at 10 o'clock just to watch Pee-wee's Playhouse. But so Pee-wee's Playhouse and merges with H.R. Puffin stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, that would be pretty trippy.
It helps to be a bit trippy or a bit high to actually watch, because I watch H.R. Puffin stuff. That was one of my early, I should have listed that as one of my early favorite, because that was like early 70s or something.
Yeah, I think.
I can't remember the exact date.
Yeah, it was probably on the cusp there. Like, I'm going to guess it was either, yeah, you're probably right. It probably was like 70, if I had to bet, but it might have been as late as or as early as 69 or something.
I just looked it up right now, and it ran from Saturday mornings from September 6th, 1969 to December 27th, 1969.
We nailed it.
So it only went that, it was only one season. There were 17 episodes. So I don't know why. It must have been in repeats or whatever. Like,
yeah.
But I definitely, well, I found that I really liked it for some reason. Maybe I was just
same
the
here.
Right age.
Yeah. Yeah. I was a big
somehow
fan too.
like it, which is just weird, but I did like it.
Well, the production values were really good you know, for television at that time. I was just going to say, and clearly the whole H.R. Puffin stuff look inspired the McDonald Land characters.
Yep. Oh, yeah. There's a note here about that. If you go to the Wikipedia site for H.R. Puffin stuff, which is just the H.R. dot, and then Puffin stuff is P-U-F-N-S-T-U-F. So if you want to, if any of our fans want to Google that, there is a bit there about, yeah, fast food chain McDonald later plagiarized a serious concept for its long-running advertising campaign, McDonaldland, and the company was successfully sued by the Kroft brothers for the copyright infringement.
Oh, I had another one, Dave, which is sort of farcical because I cheat a little bit. It's not actually a Saturday morning thing, but I thought Speed Buggy meets Death Race 2000 would be kind of cool.
The one I had, and it may not count because one of them may not, I can't recall if the Star Trek animated series was a Saturday morning. I think it was at another time. But if it was, then I was putting that and the Jetsons together because I think they're sort of space age.
Yeah.
And then see if Kirk can start making some moves on the Ms. Jetson.
Moves.
Maybe that's wrong.
Yep, definitely.
Okay, that was wrong on many levels.
Well, that was fun, Dave.
Yeah, I think we covered a fair amount of ground. And, you know, certainly if our fans want to respond or connect with us and see, because everyone's got your own favorites. And depending on the era that you grew up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, maybe there might be fans that like more of the stuff from the 60s. There might be people who like stuff from the 80s or 90s. Yeah. And so on. I did have a list of some of the top 80s. There was a list of the top 10. And this is from a website, cbr.com. 10 most iconic Saturday morning 80s cartoons ranked. 10, Alvin and the Chipmunks. I was never a big fan of that because the voices and that high pitch and them trying to sing, I never quite understood what the heck they were saying.
Right.
And there's that Alvin and the Chipmunks Christmas song, whatever it is that you hear at that time of year.
Right.
That is just grating to me. Like, we actually used that to get people out of the library one night. We just wanted people to leave because it was just, you know, it was late and people were sticking around. So we started playing Alvin and the Chipmunks. Number 9 was Gem. Care Bears is number 8. I don't know if you remember something called Voltron, which was a Japanese anime.
I was solidly out of the cartoon pool in the 80s, for sure. Mm.
Well, they had a G.I. Joe. They had Thundercats. You might remember a bit of Thundercats. Possibly not.
I think
Teenage
I remember
Mutant
the logo.
Ninja Turtles, you would have remembered. You would have remembered Teenage Mutant
Well,
Ninja
I know
Turtles.
Of, awesome. And I also have the Flaming Carrot crossover episode with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Very good. Inspector Gadget.
I beg your pardon?
Inspector Gadget. Remember, he would always say, like, go, go, Gadget skates, or go, go, Gadget, whatever the thing is.
Right.
It was very much like a Get Smart kind of.
Well, I was
going
to say, that wasn't actually Don Adams, was it, that voiced it? Because I know that they sort of tried to make it sound like that.
Well, yeah, they said the Get Smart's Don Adams lent his voice to Inspector Gadget.
Okay.
Which, of course, made it, and the write-up here in this CBR.com site says that, of course, immediately made it an instant classic. Another bumbling lawman, a policeman with a host of cybernetic body replacements, including palm telephones, extra long limbs, binocular vision, and so on. Number 2, there's just 2 left. 2 was Transformers. And number 1 was He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. So I guess the 80s had some good Saturday morning cartoons as well.
Well, I do remember Teen Wolf. There was a Teen Wolf animated show that it may have been crap. The only thing I know about it was that I believe it followed Pee-wee's Playhouse. So on the occasion that I didn't actually watch Pee-wee, I would maybe record it or something. And I remember there was always these promos for, you know, stay tuned for Teen Wolf.
Stay tuned for Teen Wolf. Next.
Well, the one overall, like if I were to pick one, despite how not great the animation was, I still have very, other than Johnny Quest and a few of the other ones, the original animated Spider-Man, even though it had those background and everything else, I love that.
Yeah.
That show. Yeah.
And I even love those odd psychedelic backgrounds that look like they were sort of like backgrounds from a Velvet Underground or early Pink Floyd show. But they were really cool.
Yeah, and any of our fans can just Google, like you can actually Google just to say original, you know, like the animated Spider-Man best episode, like actually find and somehow find whether it's on YouTube or somewhere else, try to find, because there were, even though the show was odd in itself, they had this one that went to some other dimension.
Oh, yes.
Dimension That's 5 right. or whatever it was, that was just even more like that, and Pee-wee's Playhouse and H.R. Puffin's up just make, put you in the mood for, you know, this otherworldly experience, because it was just that odd. I always like outside the box, unusual or strange episodes, and that one was definitely one.
Yeah, and it, for me, it defined so many of the villains that I hadn't read in the comic yet, like the Rhino and Mysterio. I love those portrayals in the Spider-Man cartoon. And as great as, like, that may be one of the best. It may be the best cartoon theme, at least superhero related, ever, the Spider-Man theme. But what was also great about that show was the incidental music, sort of the score for it. Like, I always remember the, like, the dun 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 dun. Dun 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 dun. Yeah. There was just some great stuff going on in there. I just realized the way I portrayed or did a rendering of that Spider-Man incidental music, it sounded like the Get Smart music, which I didn't mean to do.
But that reminds me of that original theme music, which is so iconic, that if you go back and watch that first Spider-Man film, the one with the Tobey Maguire and Kirsten Dunst and what have you, there's that little moment in the subway.
Yeah, with the busker. Yeah,
there's a subway busker playing the original thing. It's just such an iconic and beautiful moment in that film.
Yeah.
But
you know, the sad thing as Saturday morning wrapped up, you know, there was basically nothing else on TV until, if you were lucky and it was winter, Hockey Night in Canada would be on in the evening, because after the cartoons ended, it was like Scuttlebutt Lodge was on, and which, for folks who don't know Scuttlebutt Lodge, it was this guy named Red Fisher. It was a fishing show, and it was like the exact opposite of everything you'd been watching through the morning.
The Red Fisher Show, featuring Red Fisher, internationally known sportsman, outdoor editor, and member of the Fishing Hall of Fame, and his special guest.
Well, hi, friends. Good to have you up the lodge again. I'm Red Fisher here, and this is Scuttlebutt Lodge, the tall tale capital of the world.
And you had to deal with this fishing show. And the only other thing I can remember on Saturdays in the afternoon was roller derby, which I sometimes watch with my dad.
Oh my God, that and Bowling for Dollars.
Yeah. Saturdays were dry.
Yeah, the Professional Bowling Association, the PBA. There was that time when they would be playing that theme and playing that at the end of the day also, because there was a sign off.
Yes.
At the end, it was 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. Everything signed off, and you had the national anthem, and you had this, and you had these images, and you had all of this stuff, and then in the morning, you're right, then it would start up again with the same thing to start it up.
That's right.
There was also later on, there was that whole channel or whatever it was on, City or something, that was sort of like just showing traffic. Right. Like you were in some vehicle, whatever it was.
Well, there was Night Walk, and there was and there was Night Drive.
Yeah, Night Drive. Yeah,
yeah. And my friend Pat, who's a long time listener of our podcast, he was a huge fan of Night Walk and Night Drive.
Yeah, those were the days. But anyways, that is our Saturday morning cartoons episode. Sorry if we've missed anything or whatever. It's great to reminisce about these things. We do have a suggestion that we will eventually get to, even though we are really, you know, we're too old for us. We do like to reminisce and talk about things from the 60s and 70s and into the 80s. We will hopefully in the next season or later this season talk about more current things. But Troy, did you want to any final thoughts, or do you want to just remind people where they can catch us? Or
yeah, well, please check out your favorite podcast provider. We hope to be available through Spotify by the time you listen to this. Maybe check us out at our website that Dave maintains, 2of.ca. And definitely Facebook, we're Two Old Farts Talk Sci-Fi. And please join in the dialogue there, because we love the feedback and we like the interaction. We feel better about ourselves when you do come out and play. Tell a friend and do all the things that you're supposed to do, like and subscribe. And, you know, but just please do definitely keep listening, and hope you enjoyed the show.
Yeah, and certainly for those people, and this is something that we may edit out of this, or we might not from this episode, and something I haven't mentioned to you, Troy, is that I did actually get confirmation from a few people that we did miss being on the final ballot of the Aurora Award by one vote this past season. So we definitely are hoping that this current year, 2022, that we'll have in early 2023 more people that will be voting, so we can actually make the final ballot in the related or whatever the category that podcasts fit in for the Aurora Award, which is from the Canadian Science Fiction and Fantasy Association, where if you're a Canadian citizen or a permanent resident, you can actually pay $10, get a chance to be able to nominate and to vote for the Aurora Awards. So we're certainly hoping that, you know, people will support us, and we came that close. So anyways, who knows if that's, we'll keep that news in this episode. If we do, that's fine. So, you know, people are voting and people are aware of our show. So anyways, I am David Klink.
And I'm Troy Harkin.
See you all for our next episode of Two Old Farts
Talk Sci-Fi.
Come on and meet my pal, Clark Kent, the star of Superman.
You know, there's something mighty interesting going on around my town. Every place I go, I see that favorite new cereal of mine, Kellogg Sugar Frosted Flakes. Look.
You just can't be Superman, and that's all there is to it.
Why not?
Well, for one thing, you're a girl.
And that's not much of a reason.
Well, I know something you can do that Superman will sure like.
What?
You can have some more Kellogg Sugar Frosted Flakes. Superman says they're the best.
I like them the best, too.
Hey, I know. Since you like Sugar Frosted Flakes, you can be Supergirl.
You see, kids may argue, but never about Kellogg's Sugar Frosted Flakes. This is the new cereal kids all agree is the best-tasting cereal ever. Tony, tell the folks how Frosted Flakes taste.
Great!
New Flakes, Frosted Flakes, Kellogg's Sugar Frosted Flakes.
We have come to the end of another day's programming on Channel 9, Cable 8. CFTO is owned and operated by Baton Broadcasting Incorporated and is a charter member of the Canadian Television Network, CTV. CFTO-TV transmits with the authorized power of 325 kilowatts video and 49 kilowatts audio. CFTO now leaves the air to return again later this morning. This is Dave Duvall wishing all our viewers a very pleasant good night and good morning.